Hello and welcome to Bright Wings, children's books to make the heart soar. I am your host, Charity Hill. The purpose of this conversation is to help mothers and fathers identify books that will liberate their children to embrace truth, goodness, and beauty. Okay, so I don't really hate Hatchet by Gary Paulson, but I wanted to get the attention of everyone who loves it. 2.5 million copies of Hatchet have been sold. It was all the rage when I was in middle school, and it's still being taught at the Catholic elementary school that we left before we moved to Texas. Hatchet is one of those books that's on everybody's best books for fill-in-the-blank list. So what I want to share with you is the plot line of Hatchet. Hopefully this will be helpful if you haven't read it in a while. I literally just read it again yesterday afternoon. And I want to note with you some of the things that make this an obviously admirable book, an interesting book, a fascinating and at times beautiful book. And then I'm going to talk to you about the part about Hatchet that I hate. And it's probably not going to be the thing that you think it is. At least not exactly. So if you remember, the story concerns Brian Robeson. When we meet Brian, he is in an airplane going to visit his dad. His parents have just gotten divorced. And Brian knows why. His dad doesn't understand that there's a backstory to the divorce. In fact, neither his mother nor his father knows that Brian has witnessed his mom engaging in an affair. He observed her having a passionate kiss. Brian calls this knowledge the secret. And Brian is experiencing this divorce to be shattering. He says, all that he lived in was coming apart, and the breaking and shattering of all the solid things, his home, his life, all the solid things. Divorce, a breaking word. An ugly breaking word. There's not just cognitive dissonance going on for Brian, but kind of an existential crisis, a crisis at the level of his identity. In the car on the way to the airport, Brian's mother gives him a hatchet, which he sticks in his belt, and he's kind of embarrassed about the way he's carrying it. But he gets on the airplane and he's headed into the Canadian wilderness to meet up with his dad. It's just him and the bush pilot in a single engine airplane. The pilot has a heart attack. They veer off course. The pilot dies, and Brian basically luckily crash lands the airplane at the edge of a lake, actually into the lake. And he spends the next 54 days learning how to survive through his wits, with his hatchet, and whatever small objects he's born with him out of the airplane, his jacket, shoelaces, that kind of thing. So let me continue by telling you about some notably wonderful things. So one of the things early in Brian's experience that I loved was he called to mind the attitude and words and guidance of one of his teachers. Hey, teachers, that's cool. His teacher named Mr. Perpick, who was always telling his students to stay positive and stay on top of things and to get motivated. And so he's calling to mind these exhortations of his teacher, which I love. And that helps Brian to start taking action in light of his hunger and his disaster. So he lays out all of these different things that his, like a fingernail clipper, a $20 bill, which is useless to him, his shoelaces, his broken watch, t-shirt, all these things. Get motivated. Look at all of it, Robeson, he tells himself. He's reminded of the words of Mr. Perpich, who used to drill into them, you are the most valuable asset. Don't forget that. You are the best thing you have. Really beautiful words, really affirming words, but it is, just as an aside, it is interesting to note that it's not words from his dad or his mom that he recalls in this moment that encourage him and help him to get motivated, but words from his teacher. What are some other admirable things? There are these dark moments where he's nearly crushed with self-pity. When he wakes up after this extreme bout of self-pity, everything's still the same, and he realizes self-pity is just simply not an option. It doesn't do him any good. He's still in the same circumstances, even when he gives way to those feelings. There's another moment where he's nearly crushed to despair, and he actually kind of tries to commit suicide with his hatchet on his wrist, but he gives up partway through. And regarding the suicide moment, when he wakes up that morning after the suicide and his wrist is messed up, he describes himself as being new. It's the first day of his new way of being himself. And I want you to notice, though, how he describes this experience. So the dry blood turning black, and he says, he was not the same. The plane passing changed him. The disappointment cut him down and made him new. He was not the same and would never be again like he had been. That was one of the true things, the new things. And the other one was that he would not die. He would not let death in again. He was new. So I love this. I love this decision of Brian's to live new. I love this decision to live on. I guess he did this 5 days after the crash because he counts 42 days from when he had died and been born as the new Brian. And that was 45 total days after the crash. And from that point, he says, he did not have hope that he would be rescued. That was gone. But hope in his knowledge, hope in the fact that he could learn and survive and take care of himself. Tough hope, he thought that night. I am full of tough hope. I will come back and comment on that later. But one of the wonderful things about Hatchet that I admire is how it shows that we can't take anything for granted, that in fact, we really are dependent and we are really part of nature. One of the beautiful changes Brian notices in himself is his awareness of nature, of being a part of nature, of participating in nature. He grows in his attentiveness and his attunement, in his ability to see. He becomes his vision. He has to change what he sees, what he's noticing. And then he's able to hunt these ground dwelling birds. I think they're grouse, maybe. And Brian learns patience. And I quote, patience, he thought. So much of this was patience, waiting and thinking and doing things right. So much of all this, so much of all living was patience and thinking. And he says this especially in regarding getting food and surviving. He said that the basic idea for his shelter had been right, but he just hadn't gone far enough. He'd been lazy, but now he knew the second most important thing about nature, what drives nature. Food was first, but the work for food went on and on. Nothing in nature was lazy. He had tried to take a shortcut and paid for it with his turtle eggs. So this, as a mom who spends a lot of time preparing food for people, it really helped me to know that despite how much time I'm spending preparing food, it's nothing like spending all day doing just food gathering and preparation. And that's what Brian does almost all day, hunt and prepare food. And it's not menial. It requires his intelligence and patience, like a kind of virtue. It requires skillfulness and thoughtfulness. So one of the beautiful things is, because I am a person who is similarly existentially hungry, like Brian becomes, he says he changes. And he says, I am not the same. He thought, I see, I hear differently. He did not know when the change started, but it was there. When a sound came to him now, he didn't just hear it, but would know the sound. He would swing and look at it, a breaking twig, a movement of air, and know the sound as if he somehow could move his mind back down the wave of sound to the source. And then it goes on, speaking of hunger, he hadn't thought he would ever be full again. He knew only the hunger, and here he was full. One turtle egg and a few handfuls of berries, and he felt full. And there was still hunger there, but it was not like it was, not tearing at him. This was hunger that he knew would always be there, even when he had food, a hunger that made him look for things, see things, a hunger to make him hunt. And interestingly, after Brian is rescued, it describes how he goes to the grocery store just to be in awe of the great variety of food that is so abundantly available. It's like his experience does give him an understanding of gratitude. Especially regarding food, it's as if he becomes sort of permanently grateful for the ease and abundance of modern food provision. I love how he becomes, how he experiences becoming a part of nature. And even with his spear, even with his bow and arrow, he still feels like a participant in nature. He has to have a great awareness of all the other animals and their movements and their shapes. I think what so many of us love about this book, this is why boys, especially who I guess fall off the reading bandwagon in middle school particularly, and I've heard that this book really ignites reading for a lot of middle school boys. I think what boys love about this book, and it is really admirable, they love how competent Brian becomes. What makes it even more remarkable is Brian doesn't just become competent, but in fact, he has to discover all these things for himself. He doesn't even have a scoutmaster or a tutor of any kind. No one is showing him the ropes. And so even though I love this competency, and I love this kind of message of you are enough, you are capable, you are resilient, you can be strong, you can grow, you can overcome. I love all those messages. Unfortunately, I think they're actually too strong. What I hate about the book is the anthropological argument it's making. Did you catch that? I don't actually hate the divorce part as much as I hate the fact that the divorce scenario is actually part of this larger argument that Paulson perhaps is unwittingly making. An anthropological argument that, in fact, Brian is utterly alone. I think that's one anthropological argument that Paulson is making, wittingly or not. Perhaps you listened to Stories for Strong Boys in my conversation with William Hammett about men's identity being, in a certain sense, more realized through action. That's what masculinity discloses to all of us, that we're all realized, in a certain sense, through action, but boys and men in a particular way. I would say this book is a hyper-masculinity, an unbalanced masculinity, an unintegrated masculinity. Do you remember that quote I read to you about hope? He talks about he doesn't have hope of rescue. He doesn't even really have hope for the future. Do you remember? He has hope in his knowledge. He has hope in the fact that he could learn and survive and take care of himself. That truly is, as he observes, a tough hope. And tough not in the sense that he's become sturdy so much. It's a tough hope because it's all up to you. It's really Pelagian. And in the circumstance in which everything's all up to you, and that is your only hope, you're utterly alone. That's the argument of this book. None of the adults in his life are reliable. And in fact, even though he's very close to nature and he is sort of living in sync with nature, and that's sort of very profoundly beautiful, there are all these moments where he argues that things are so random. And the argument of the book is not only is he alone, but there's just randomness. So you're alone and it's all up to you and you have no certainties. Everything's random. You don't know what's coming next. As evidence of that, let me just cite this passage in the last quarter of the book. He says, this morning he had been fat, well, almost fat, and happy, sure of everything, with good weapons and food and the sun in his face and things looking good for the future. And inside of one day, just one day, he had been run over by a moose and a tornado and had lost everything and was back to square one. Just like that. A flip of some giant coin, and he was the loser. Then Brian considers that there's a difference now, that he has so much more knowledge. He knows what to do. He says, when the light comes, I'll start to rebuild. I still have the hatchet, and that's all I had in the first place. Come on, he thought, baring his teeth in the darkness. Come on. Is that the best you can do? Is that all you can hit me with? A moose and a tornado? Well, he thought, holding his ribs and smiling, then spitting mosquitoes out of his mouth. Well, that won't get the job done. That was the difference now. He had changed, and he was tough. I'm tough where it counts, tough in the head. So is this quality of randomness and this great existential isolation of Brian, of who he is, like an argument being made for existential solitude and randomness? And so I think that is anthropological problem number one with Hatchet. Maybe it sounds weird, this term anthropological. I mean, what is true of man, right? And so the anthropological questions I'm always asking on Bright Wings are, who am I? Where have I come from? Where am I going? What good must I do? Those are anthropological questions. And what I mean by anthropological problems is I think Hatchet is wrong on certain truths about the meaning of the human person. So the extreme individuality and the randomness that are depicted in the book, I think are anthropologically false. I think we are actually deeply connected. I think our deepest identity is relation, is relationship. I think that the world is not random. When I look back at my life, I don't see randomness. I see connected events that are deeply meaningful, how people and situations and even mistakes cohere for an order. I don't think nihilism underlies our existence. I don't think events are merely a flip of the coin. Funnily enough, I think the book itself provides counter evidence to its own proposals. I think the book provides evidence that relationship does define our identity. because Brian is experiencing that as a wound and not as the way things should be. And as the book opens, we're aware that because of the divorce, Brian's identity is kind of shattered. I mean, it is shattered. The breaking and shattering of all the solid things, his home, his life, all the solid things. That's a quote from page 3. And so Brian's been cut loose from his identity. He thought he knew who he was. He thought he knew what was certain. He thought he knew who he was and where he came from. Okay, so my first complaint with Hatchet is its randomness. Kind of an anthropological randomness and this anthropology of this hyper independence. My second problem is that I'm really bothered by the opening problem of the book never being resolved. So his parents are getting a divorce, and then the premise to heal the child who is suffering from his parents' divorce is to throw him out into the wilderness and teach him how to survive anything. But this is the very thing I want to argue against. Just because Brian survives in the wilderness doesn't mean he achieves identity and reintegration. Just because he can survive anything, all this other stuff, doesn't mean he's okay. Just because he's reborn as a survivor doesn't mean he's okay. We had a book floating around the house about the time I started thinking harder about Hatchet, and that book is called Torn Asunder, Children, The Myth of the Good Divorce and the Recovery of Origins by Margaret Harper McCarthy, or rather, it's edited by Margaret Harper McCarthy. This book is a collection of essays by theologians, philosophers, political scientists, lawyers, psychologists, sociologists, and cultural critics. And in this book, they talk about what is the reality of what children of divorce have actually experienced. In the best of circumstances, what is the trauma of divorce like for a child? And what is that like when you become an adult yourself? They catalog the pain and wisdom of two generations who have experienced good divorce. And since I am all about talking about the things people don't want to talk about, I really appreciated the first essay by Lisa Lacona. These couple of paragraphs struck me as really relevant to what is going on in Hatchet. She writes, "When children of divorce want to excavate their experiences, the prevailing culture prefers that they not. This is in a large part because our culture is, because we are, uncomfortable with any problem that rocks the human person at the level of being. We either deal with the problem of divorce as a problem of education, patiently explaining to children why the divorce happened and how it was not their fault, or as a problem of social capital, one that can be fixed by better custody arrangements, stronger stepfamilies, or better access to education. We want divorce to be something children can, quote, get past, quote, grow out of, or be talked out of. But precisely because divorce is a problem of being, the solutions that remain merely at the level of doing are for the most part ineffective. Indeed, although these alternatives can produce a highly functioning human being in many respects, there remains at the heart of that person a deep sense of incompleteness and loneliness. At our center, there is a void. More sophisticated strategies for achieving a good divorce or better research into what produces emotionally resilient children, however well-meaning, are really attempts to impose upon a child adult views of functionality or the paramount importance of self-realization for the adult against the evidence of the child's own being. To me, it's as if Hatchet is saying, if Brian can survive out there all this horrible, difficult stuff, if he can, we can admire him for all of that. If he can function out there in the wild, he'll be okay. He'll function okay when he comes back to society. He can handle his parents' divorce. That seems to me to be the argument of Hatchet. And this drives me a little crazy because the fundamental problem of the book, his mother's infidelity to his father and his parents' divorce, it's not dealt with, it remains unresolved. And surviving in the wilderness is just that. It's surviving. It's not thriving. It's not wholeness. It's not integration at the level of being. We admire surviving under dire circumstances, right? We admire his grit. We admire his ingenuity, his resourcefulness, his courage. But surviving is not thriving. Brian's okay, but he's not healed at the end of the book. It's very popular to talk about trauma right now. Brian's experienced two enormous traumas. Surviving is not an adequate replacement for belonging. Hatchet communicates, I don't need people. I am alone and I will be fine. All of the adults in my life are too consumed with their own existence.
Or in the case of the pilot, they're unreliable. They can't be counted on. They have heart attacks.
And I have to learn how to rely on myself because that's all I can count on. Everything else is random, but I can have hope in who? Another? No. No one's coming for me. Well, maybe. But
the fact that I got rescued is random. The fact that I got rescued was an accident.
And so who can you rely on? You. Tough hope. You are your most valuable asset. Don't forget that. You are the best thing you have. It's true, and yet it's taken to an extreme. Ah, and my friends, virtue is in the mean. So Brian never gets a chance to unpack the trauma of his parents' divorce or the trauma that he knows the secret behind his parents' divorce. He never gets to share that with anyone. There's no sharing at the deeper level of being in this book between two human beings. Brian functions great. His functionality is definitely okay. But what about Brian at the level of being?
In the opening pages of Hatchet, Brian's world breaks, and it's never put back together. It's never restored. It seems like Paulson is making an implicit argument that this is how it is in the real world. You survive disaster, and that's life. There may be disconnected points of goodness, but they're disconnected. They don't make sense. Goodness is the heroism of choosing to go forward and to be mindful of the good things you've received somehow, the good things that have spontaneously happened. And for those of you out there who think that this is not enough, that this is inadequate, I want to validate that. We don't have to share Paulson's worldview. We can have a better narrative.
I want a survival story with a good anthropology.
And bring on the grit.
That part doesn't scare me.
I want a survival story for my middle grade reader that brings redemption.
On this note, I strongly recommend a survival story called The Young Man and the Sea by Rodman Philbrick. You get family problems, you get grit, you get really hard work, you get lost at sea in a fog. It's the story of Skiff Beeman, whose mom has just died and his dad is drunk almost every day on the couch. His dad's a fisherman, but he has stopped caring about everything since the mom died. Skiff's been pumping out the bottom of their fishing boat so that it won't sink, but he comes home from school one day after having pumped it out in the morning, and the boat is below water. There's craft, there's growth and competency, there's mastery of skills, there's one good adult, at least. There's bloody hands, there's unbelievable amounts of courage and grit and self-doubt before a very believable redemption. Hey, I think I just gave you a book review without a spoiler. Really, you should check it out. I really love this book. I read it alongside, just after my daughter and I had read The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway. And this book gives that book, The Old Man and the Sea, a bit of a nod in its theme and certain elements of the plot. So there you have my take on the anthropological problems of Hatchet by Gary Paulson. And you have my encouragement and blessing to run out and purchase The Young Man in the Sea by Rodman Philbrick.